From Mozart's day until now, many people have written in all millions of words about Mozart the man and Mozart the musician. Some have wisely restricted themselves to facts, while others, alas, have allowed fancy to intrude. This is a great pity, because so many who read have a touching faith in anything that is printed, and will retail it to a future generation as unquestionable truth. Among the nonsenses is the story that Mozart was poisoned by the composer Salieri, who was jealous of the younger man's talents. He had no need to be, for his own were not inconsiderable, and he was highly regarded in his day. We know from Mozart's letters that he was critical of Salieri's music, but he could be no less scathing about what he found imperfect in others. Unfortunately, a play of 1830 by Pushkin, which developed in 1898 into an opera by Rimsky-Korsakov, helped to perpetuate the poisoning myth. And in recent times, Peter Schaeffer has written a play, Amadeus, also seen as a cinema presentation, which further embellishes the legend, while doing Mozart's memory the inexcusable disservice of presenting him as a revoltingly unlovable eccentric. This, as we know from the descriptions of his contemporaries, he most certainly was not. Even further out in the realms of fantasy is a claim that it was Mozart's brothers in the craft who killed him. This preamble will, I hope, persuade you to read with discrimination about Mozart the man. And I hope that you will, because my talk is concerned primarily with Mozart the Freemason. I shall, of course, have to say something about his music, but again, you must look elsewhere for expert and informed views on his 41 symphonies, his numerous concertos, and the extensive and varied repertoire of more than 500 other large and small-scale works. I must, however, say a word or two about Mozart's father, Leopold, for he is essential to my story. Leopold was a well-educated man who settled in Salzburg, his son's birthplace, quite contentedly serving as a paid musician. For 40 years, he was at the court of successive prince archbishops of the province, rising from violinist and composer to deputy director of the orchestra. And I must remind you that not a few composers of those days, and even later, who are revered in our time, also sat below the salt, at ducal and princely courts, because they enjoyed working with the other musicians, could compose to their heart's content, and be fed and watered at little or no expense to themselves. Leopold, who had taught his son Wolfgang Amadeus all that he knew, which was a lot, worried greatly about him, the more especially when Wolfgang cut the paternal apron strings and moved to Vienna, there to marry his landlady's daughter, Constanze. We're talking now of a young man of 26, who had but 9 years of life ahead of him. Here was a friendly young man, who made many friends. Some he and his wife entertained at home. Others he met as pupils, or as patrons or performers of his music, or among those who listened to it and loved it. He was invited to their houses, and indeed their palaces, for some were among the highest in the land. It's not irrelevant to mention that Mozart himself had received the highest grade of a knightly order from the Pope when only just 15 years old, and was thus, in our terms, Sir Wolfgang Mozart. Perhaps only gradually it dawned upon him that not a few of all these friends were Freemasons. He may well have discovered in conversation that his own deeply thought-out philosophical ideas were in accord with Masonic teaching. He would certainly have become aware that in the Vienna lodges, men of exalted rank were able to meet on the level with those less favored by fortune, and that the arts, the sciences, and even the church were well represented. In 1783, his friend Anton Stadler, a famous clarinetist, asked him to write some solemn pieces for wind instruments, and there's good reason to believe that they were required for processions in Stadler's lodge. Mozart rose admirably to the occasion and included a knocking theme, strongly suggestive, in this really excellent music. But it was at the end of the following year, on 14th December 1784, that he became a Freemason. His initiation was in Lodge Charity, meeting then at the Inn of the Red Crayfish. We know quite a lot about this eventful evening, for the summons has survived. We learn, for instance, that Mozart's name had been proposed 4 weeks before. We're told that a lodge secretary, by now replaced, had slipped up on the paperwork, but that all was now in order. We find, and this is particularly interesting, that a priest, Wenzel Zummer, was initiated with Mozart. The master, who himself performed the ceremony, was a Baron von Hornberg, a former treasurer at the Electoral Court of Mannheim, and now a dramatist. We can't now pursue the complex Austrian Masonic history of those times, but it must be said that under pressure from a new emperor, the craft closed down in 1795, and some of its records found their way into the state archives. In recent years, those records have been studied, and we are fortunate in being able to learn from lodge agendas, minutes, and signature books of some, but not all, of Mozart's Masonic activities. On Christmas Eve, only 10 days after his admission, he visited a sister lodge, True Concord, and a fortnight later, early in the new year, he was passed to the fellow crafts degree in the same lodge, as a courtesy to the Lodge of Charity. His fellow candidate on this occasion was an Italian nobleman, a marquis from Austrian Lombardy, being passed at the request of a lodge in another province. The master of True Concord was then Ignaz von Born, regarded as the father of all the Vienna lodges. He was a scientist, and we shall hear his name again. One thing we learn from these records is that lodges in Vienna often met much more frequently than is nowadays the custom. Only 7 days had elapsed since his passing, when Mozart was once more signing in as a visitor in True Concord, and in a further 2 weeks he was back again. This time he was due for a disappointment, for the candidate for initiation didn't turn up, and that candidate was to have been Joseph Haydn. This composer, already famous throughout Europe, was then 53 years old, and was a good friend and great admirer of Mozart, and may well have been influenced by him to seek admission to the craft. True Concord was a larger and more prestigious lodge than Charity, with over 200 members at this time, and Haydn's letters to its secretary survive to show that, all too briefly as we are now aware, he felt himself moved by the ideals of Freemasonry. His absence on this occasion was due to a failure in communication, and he was initiated at a later meeting which Mozart couldn't attend. Haydn, unlike Mozart, was an inactive Mason, for other than at the special event which I shall be describing before long, there is no record of his further attendance in a Vienna lodge, even to be passed and raised, nor, as far as can be ascertained, did he pursue a Masonic career elsewhere. But for Mozart, there was an especial interest in the next meeting that we know of, in his mother lodge on 6th of April. His father, Leopold, then on a visit to Vienna, was initiated. Although the official records are missing, it is safe to assume that Wolfgang was present. 10 days later, on 16th April, father and son signed in as visitors to True Concord, and this occasion deserves close attention. Leopold was passed to the second degree, and here again we make an assumption which we believe to be eminently reasonable. There was already in use in the Vienna lodges an ode, The Fellowcraft's Journey, by Josef Franz Ratschke, a well-known writer who held the office of orator in True Concord. Brother Johann Holzer, of the same lodge, had composed a setting for it, but we know from Mozart's catalogue of his works that he had written his own tune for it on the 26th of March, 3 weeks previously. It's not difficult to believe that his version was performed at his father's second-degree ceremony, with himself at the keyboard. This quite short song was the first piece which Mozart, as a Freemason, wrote for the Kraft. Others were to come. But now we encounter a different sort of lodge meeting. The first of these to engage our attention took place only 4 days after Leopold's passing. It was a kind of benefit concert for two musical brethren, with several other Masons, including Anton Stadler, lending their talents to the program. The younger Mozart, we find, entertained the company with his popular improvisations. Alas, by their very nature, they were ephemeral, and so we can only imagine the pleasure that they gave. Although his return to Salzburg was imminent, Leopold would assuredly have been there, and he was most certainly at his own raising to the Master Mason's degree 2 days later, on the 22nd of April. We can't be so sure about his son's presence, partly because there is no signature sheet for that occasion, and partly for the very good reason that we do not know the date and lodge of his raising. Raised he was at some time, because a printed lodge list of 1789 shows him as a Master Mason. Leopold's rather rapid passage through the 3 degrees was dictated by his limited leave of absence from his duties in Salzburg. Wolfgang's progress was, or could have been, a more leisurely affair. But we must return to April 1785, the truly hectic month of Mozartian Freemasonry, for Leopold managed yet one more meeting before he took coach for home. On 24th April, he visited the Lodge of Crowned Hope, which has not hitherto figured in this chronicle of events. This was for a meeting convened to honour Ignaz von Born, who had just been ennobled by Emperor Joseph II for his scientific achievements. For this festive occasion, Mozart had written the music for a cantata, The Mason's Joy, to words by a Bohemian priest, Franz Petran, who had recently joined Crowned Hope. As was so often the case with him, Mozart had been too busy to begin the composition until 4 days before. And as we have seen, within those 4 days he had played at a Masonic concert and had possibly witnessed his father's raising. Nevertheless, it was all right on the night, and we learn the soloist, Valentin Adamberger, a distinguished opera tenor, the chorus and the orchestra, all Freemasons, were in great form. Other works by Viennese brethren were also performed and much appreciated, but Mozart's cantata was clearly the pièce de résistance. He had the additional pleasure of Leopold's presence to witness its success, and some sources claim that Haydn was also there. It's a delightful piece, and as with Mozart's other Masonic works, which we shall be mentioning, we are now fortunate in being able to hear modern recordings of it. An appropriate footnote is that the beautifully engraved title page of the published score dedicates the proceeds of its sale to charities for the poor. There was a visit to True Concord in August 1785, and another lodge concert in October, with Mozart's extemporizations on the program. But the next noteworthy event comes on 17th November in the Lodge of Crowned Hope. This was a lodge of sorrow, a meeting to mourn the passing of two distinguished members, Count Esterházy, the Court Chancellor of Hungary, and His Royal Highness Duke George of Mecklenburg-Strelitz, who was a brother of Queen Charlotte of England. For this sad occasion, Mozart had written, again at great speed, his Masonic funeral music for orchestra. It's recognized as one of his finest works, and unlike his other Masonic compositions, this one has always been available to the public, both in concert performances and, in modern times, in numerous excellent recordings. It's a deeply moving exposition of Mozart's own attitude to death, something of which we know from his letters to his father when both were master masons. In the following month, December, Crowned Hope held another benefit concert, and for this we have the program, an enormously lengthy one by modern standards. Two symphonies, a concerto, and some wind music by other composers, plus a second performance of Mozart's cantata, one of his piano concertos, and some of his pieces for solo piano. Both as conductor and as pianist, Mozart would have had a busy evening. Again, we pass lightly over a further visit by Mozart to True Concord, and come to January 1786. Then, for reasons which belong to Austrian Masonic history and do not greatly affect our present purpose, the Lodge of Newly Crowned Hope was being formed to bring together the members of Crowned Hope, Charity, and a third lodge, Palm Tree, all of which thereby ceased to exist. For this inaugural meeting of what was now his lodge, Mozart wrote music for an opening and a closing ode by a brother who had been the orator in Charity. The opening ode praised the Emperor Joseph, who had, as they sang, crowned anew their hope. For he had, with intentional goodwill, ordered the contraction of the Vienna lodges. The closing hymn thanked the first master and officers of the lodge, and pledge the support of all the brethren. And now, for more than 5 years, there is a frustrating absence of records, certainly so far as lodge meetings are concerned. There is, however, a fascinating entry in 1787 in a Viennese Freemason's autograph album, in which Mozart has written, in English, a short philosophical phrase, then lapsing into German to sign off as a member of Newly Crowned Hope. And 2 years later, his name appears in the printed lodge list to which we have already referred. There are in various sources hints at Masonic compositions during this period, but insufficient evidence survives to make a positive identification. We are left with a strong probability, if no more, that Mozart sustained his Masonic activity. He certainly continued his Masonic interest. Not until September 1791 can we be sure about another lodge visit by Mozart, and this was at Truth and Eternity in Prague, where, in his honour, the brethren applauded his entry and then heard a performance of his cantata, The Mason's Joy. One biographer in more recent times has written of other visits to this lodge. We now return to Vienna, where, at the end of that same month, Mozart's Magic Flute was given its first performance. Although the text was by a Freemason, Schikaneder, not, alas, a very worthy one, it must be clearly understood that this much-loved opera was in no sense written for the craft. Nevertheless, it was from the outset recognized as containing Masonic allusions of all kinds in both the words and music. Certainly, productions in living memory on the continent and in England have tended to emphasize these allusions, for instance, by the use of signs and with the square and compasses prominently displayed on costumes and props. Three temples, threefold cords, trials by air, earth, fire, and water, an initiation. These are unmistakable pointers, and much more could be said if time permitted. It's amusing that a fairly recent book about the opera by Jacques Chailly manages to discover fives rather than threes, and sees in this Mozart's deliberate intention to refer to the adoptive masonry which admitted women to its temples. He is, however, adrift on the extent to which such an organization had spread into Austria in Mozart's time. Only where a production of the Magic Flute, such as the most recent at the Glyndebourne Opera House, uses ladies as well as men in the temple assembly, can we see a suggestion of co-masonry. We now come to Mozart's last Masonic work, A Little Freemason's Cantata. Perhaps an odd title, for it's a good deal longer than the earlier piece of the same kind. Sadly, it proved to be the last composition of any sort that he was able to complete before his death. True to form, he finished the score only 3 days before its performance, which was at the consecration of a new temple for the Lodge of Newly Crowned Hope, on the 18th of November. Schikaneder produced a very worthy text for the occasion, and, with three soloists, a chorus, and an orchestra, it was highly successful. Mozart's widow, in later years, recalled how delighted he had been with its reception by his brethren. There's an appendix to the cantata in the form of two verses to be sung when the brethren form a chain at the close of a meeting. Some doubts have been expressed as to whether Mozart himself composed the tune for it. The Austrian government have no such doubts. In 1946, having very reasonably decided that Haydn's melody for their old anthem, borrowed in 1917 for the German Deutschland, Deutschland über alles, had been somewhat debased during the Third Reich, it was thought that the music of this Masonic chain song was just right for a new national anthem. Mozart's name is firmly placed at the head of the score. After that consecration meeting back in 1791, Mozart, who had been ailing for some time, with what has been identified in modern terms as a streptococcal infection, could do little more. He took to his bed and tried, but failed, to finish his Requiem Mass, leaving the task to a young colleague. Although he was of the Catholic faith, there was some difficulty, because of his Freemasonry, in persuading a local priest to administer the last rites, but this was resolved. On the 5th of December, 17 days after his last appearance in Lodge, he died in the presence of family and friends. Our story is not quite finished, for the close of Mozart's life deserves better than the misconception, nay, the fiction, to which it has been and still is subjected. We have already dealt with the poison story, which, it has to be admitted, may have gained some credence from Mozart's own suspicion, when he was in low health and spirits, that someone might have slipped him a lethal potion. But the funeral interment have also been misunderstood and misrepresented. It would have been fitting had we been able to report that there was in St. Stephen's Cathedral, Vienna, a splendid Requiem Mass for Mozart, attended by the many who mourned, and they did, the loss of the still young genius. But there was not. Although there were many Catholic priests who were Freemasons, it would seem that none had influence at the cathedral, where the resident clerics would agree to no more than a brief service over the coffin at an external alcove, today preserved as a memorial to Mozart. At this service were composers, among whom was Salieri, noblemen, including a Baron van Swieten, who afterwards helped Constanze Mozart and made some provision for her children until her fortunes improved, and others, several of whom were Freemasons. Least understood has been the fact that after this service, the remains of the composer were transported unaccompanied to St. Mark's Cemetery, quite a distance from the city centre, and there laid in a common grave which was left unmarked. Some apologists have blamed the fearful weather for the failure of friends to pay the final tribute, but there are records to prove that it was a fine day for the season of the year. The truth is that there was at the time a positive reaction against funereal extravagance of any kind, a reaction reinforced in some respects by decree. Burial in church crypts had been forbidden since 1784. Even coffins were frowned upon, and the interment of several bodies in a communal grave was the norm, often regardless of wealth and station. Numerous contemporaries of Mozart were thus buried, and Mozart's Masonic friends were supporters of what they regarded as a characteristic of the Emperor's enlightened views. Perhaps the most telling confirmation is that the coffin of Mozart's sister, Maria Anna, who became by marriage a baroness, was in 1829, 38 years later, committed in exactly the same way. As to the charge of abandonment of his memory by his fellow Freemasons, we need do no more than report upon the next meeting of the Lodge of Newly Crowned Hope. After a third-degree ceremony, a lodge of sorrow was opened to honour Mozart. The oration then given by Brother Karl Hensler was afterwards printed and is well worth quoting. It has pleased the eternal architect of the universe to tear from our chain of brotherhood one of its most deserving and beloved links. Who did not know him? Who did not esteem him? Who did not love him? Our worthy brother Mozart. Only a few weeks ago he stood in our midst, glorifying with his magical music the dedication of our temple. Who amongst us would then have thought how soon he was to be taken from us? Mozart's death is an irreplaceable loss to art. His talent, which had already shown itself when he was a boy, made him one of the wonders of our time. Half of Europe esteemed him. The great called him their darling, and we called him brother. He was husband and father, a friend to friends, and a brother to his brothers. Such was Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, man, musician, Freemason.